gentlemen. Welcome, Henrik here with Red Ice TV. It is Thursday, April 12th, and of course we have had a couple of really intense days here leading up to today, which seems to be a cool-off period, thank God. Syria, of course, is in grave conflict after the staged, I think we can say with some confidence now, staged fake chemical attack that they blamed on Assad. Of course, we're going to deconstruct this with our guest today, but we want to get into what's happened here in the last couple of days between Russia and America, of course, who are doing this by proxy. There has been strikes even by Israel on the T4 airbase in Syria, a major transgression, completely careless of sending missiles into a completely volatile situation like this. We're going to talk about that too, but basically deconstruct this a bit and see what is happening and why this 180 from Trump regarding Syria as well. It's going to be very important. So our guest today is Angelo John Gage and Kevin McDonald, both returnees, of course. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming on. Good to have you both here.
Great to be here.
Glad to be here, Henrik.
Awesome. So let's talk about this, guys, of what's happened here in the last couple of days. I think, fortunately, today has been a day that we kind of can cool off a little bit and kind of review some of the material because it was just moving so fast yesterday. Everything was triggered, obviously, by the chemical attack. So let's talk about that a little bit first. And the insanity from people believing that Assad would do something just at a time when Trump has basically said he was ready to pull out of Syria. He didn't want to be in there anymore. It was a perfect setup, basically, for the situation of Assad being able to take back his own country. So, Kevin, let's start with you. How did you view the chemical attack, and what in the world would be the incentive for Assad to do this against his own people and against himself, ultimately?
Well, there's absolutely no incentive that I can see. And obviously, huge, huge downside, given what happened last year. And by the way, the Department of Defense of the United States has said there's still no corroboration that the attack last year in April or March, whenever it was actually, you know, done by the Assad government. So we don't even, you know, we attacked them once. How gullible do you have to be that this would be an actual attack by the Assad government? It's mind-boggling, really. And I really would think that Trump would be more sophisticated than that. I don't know if he feels he's in a horrible political position, that he can rally support from both sides of the aisle, actually. There's quite a few Democrats and liberals are on board with some kind of big war here, but it's just amazing because his gut instinct, as he said all through the campaign, he didn't want it anymore, these foreign intervention, these, you know, we're going to remake their government and regime change and all that. That was over with. And he's on the verge of getting out of Syria and this happens. How gullible can you be? I just boggles the mind.
Angelo, what's your take on this?
Well, I agree with Dr. McDonald here because it's literally the same script as last time. Last time, yeah. He's like, we're not going to take out Assad. No, we're good. And then this magical attack happens. And, of course, I think even then no one believed it. And then he's like, all right, let me do something. You know, let me shoot some missiles. It was kind of a symbolic attack. I think people did die, but he hit an air base, didn't do anything really much damage. Some people died, but, I think he was kind of had to do it. And then here now the same thing. Oh, you know. Everything's fine. We're going to pull out and someone does it again. And clearly to me, it's the head chopping terrorists who make videos of killing people and spread it all over the internet. It's these people, not Assad. It makes no sense whatsoever strategically at all. I mean, he's winning the war. He's not losing it. He has support of all of his people. And it's just absolutely insane for someone to believe this and not believe it's the terrorists. And I've had people say, well, Angelo, should we trust the Assad regime? Who's watching them? Who's watching these rebels? They have no accountability. We don't even know who they are. And that's the biggest thing right there. There's no accountability. A name changes every day. Now it's Al-Jaish or something. Yesterday it was Al-Nusra Front. Before it was Al-Qaeda, same people who blew up the towers, according to the narrative. Come on, folks. I mean, let's think here critically. You know. And then the first time they said it was sarin nerve gas, but they were picking up children without any, you know, mop gear or any kind of, you know, biological whatever the gear
protection,
is.
Hazmat suits or something you would have to wear. Yep.
Now it's chlorine. They made it's chlorine. And, you know, it's just so obvious for anyone with a critical thinking skills. And I don't think the public's buying it. I mean, we've seen Fox polls, you know, 67% before it was flipped by somebody. They didn't want to go in. It's just these people in power that we can't even stop, really. If they want to go to war, they're going to go without a permission. It's crazy.
which is the way our government works. We don't, right. We're not a democracy anymore. And even if the polls are against going to war, we'll go if they want. You know, it's the people at the top of the society that run this thing. And again, there's a pretty good consensus among the people on the left and the right for this. I mean, an article in Mondelez that I was mentioning, talking to you, Henrik and Angelo, there's a lot of these so-called liberal interventionists who are entirely on board with this. But I can't believe the average liberal in America is for that. I just can't. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing.
We're divided on gender, race, religion, but when it comes to war, all these people suddenly are the best friends in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's
a little war,
yeah.
No matter what.
Well, so what's the role of John Bolton here? Because, he had his first day on the job Monday, and this is, of course, just a couple of days after the supposed chemical attack. He gets in there. He fires, Tom Bossert and a number of other people. I think it's three at least in total now that he's got rid of because he wants his pawns in there. How much does he play into this, guys?
I mean, I'll tell you what, as a Iraqi war veteran myself, you know, Trump has done some silly things. One of them was attacking Syria first. That bothered me. I went viral making videos about that. And I was like, you know, maybe he had to do it. Okay, maybe it was a symbolic strike. But then when he put Bolton in, I got so triggered, I left all my MAGA rooms. And I was in MAGA chat rooms with, like, prominent figures on Fox and all these, you know, big people. I don't want to mention their names. But they were defending, oh, no, he's going to fire everyone. It's a strategy, 4D chess. I'm like, how many times can you say 4D chess to yourself? I just left. I was like, I'm done with this MAGA stuff. You know, I think he's compromised. You know, I don't know what he's doing. Putting Bolton in, this guy was all about Iraq. He wants to bomb Iran right now. Yeah. He wants to do it.
He's an extreme of the neocons, if you can believe it. Yeah. And there's also Mike Pompeo. Bill Kristol still hates Trump. He's a total never-Trumper. Keeps insulting Trump. But now they've got Pompeo. They've got Bolton, and they got Nikki Haley. Today he was talking about Nikki Haley, about Pompeo and Haley as a ticket for the presidential nomination in 2020, which could only happen over Trump's dead body. I mean, it's just an astounding situation. Why would he? It just seems like Trump cannot get people on board with the program that he advertised during his campaign. Why in the world, if you wanted non-intervention and everything, would you get John Bolton, for God's sakes? It's just unbelievable.
So what's going on, guys? People have speculated that, of course, and you had a take on this, Angelo, that there was an interesting fire in Trump Tower. There's been a number of things that potentially could have happened that the deep state, whatever you want to call them, the string pullers behind the scenes, announced to Trump that, like, we have access to stuff. We can do this. There was one person killed in that fire, by the way. We don't know if it's an accident or a threat, but I'm just, you know, hypothetically, they could have gotten to him and hence the 180. How else do we explain it?
Well, I mean, they've been trying to get them in every way possible, from, you know, Stormy Daniels to every single attack, all the media. I feel like, you know, maybe they had to say, look, you know, it's a shame your tower's on fire. Possibly next time you may be in it. You know, why not? We're dealing with psychopaths that don't care. And I think Trump, you know, when I saw him talk about doing these strikes, he didn't look so confident. He was like, yeah, you know, he's like, it's not the same Trump we saw in the campaign. So it's very possible many presidents get into power and like, yeah, I'll do this and that. And then they do this 180s because the deep state says, hey, yeah, you know what? You can build a wall maybe. We'll let you cut taxes, but you're not going to mess with our number one moneymaker, and that's war. And I feel like that's it. And if, you know, look what happened to Kennedy and other presidents that kind of went out of line. I mean, look at Clinton. Look what happened to him. I think he did something bad, and they threw Monica Lewinsky at him. I mean, I don't think the elites will ever let you be in power unless they have something on you. And if they don't, they'll threaten your life. I mean, that's not a conspiracy. That's how mafias work. And that's precisely what we have in power across the globe. We have this mafia, basically.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
Yeah, definitely. Kevin, what do you think? I mean, how do we explain such a drastic change? And, of course, people are pulling out tweets from 2013, like, don't go in or don't even announce when you go in. And, of course, he did this stupid move yesterday where he's talking about fast and smart missiles. Like, Russia, get ready. We're going to, you know, send in the missiles. It goes against all the supposed agenda. Are we taking him too, not seriously, but are we granting him too much of an intelligence here? Maybe he's just...
Yeah, I mean, it seems like he's sort of contradicting himself. I mean, if you are concerned about intervention, you don't make these tweets. If you're concerned about Russia, on the other hand, you know, if you're concerned about, you know, appealing to these liberals and so on, you don't make these. I can't make a big sense out of it. I do recall that when he did this last year, the Washington Post and other liberal, the big media was very much in favor of what he did. And it could be he feels totally threatened by these investigations. But again, I don't know why he would make those tweets if he's doing that. But I can see him as someone now who really feels hemmed in by the deep state, as Angela was saying, that he has to, you know, make some changes, and he can't pursue what he wanted to do in foreign policy. We're all speculating here, but that seems reasonable. I mean, these investigations just keep going on, and I know he's completely flipped out about it. He's furious, but maybe this is his way of dealing with it. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. So we have, you know, he's being pressured and subjected to a lot of different, I mean, there's lawsuits every other day. Of course, even his attorneys. Stormy Daniels, the attorney there that has supposedly given her money, right? His offices were being raided and stuff like that. So, you know, there could be other things behind it. We just don't know. If that's the case, one would hope that he would just simply, well, actually be vocal about it at some live press conference somewhere and just say, you know, he's being threatened or something.
Okay. But, help me, get me out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it turns out, guys, you know.
Or he's always been in on it, and he's a good actor. I mean, there's all these scenarios.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
But I don't believe somebody who's a billionaire would just risk their lives, not take pay. I mean, Trump was the ultimate savior at the storyline of coming out of nowhere, not part of the establishment, receiving America, making America. I mean, all the things. That's why. Listen, I haven't voted since George W. Bush, who sent me to Iraq. I didn't know. I was 18. My first vote. And then I said, I'll never vote again. Then I learned the truth about the government's work, the banks, the media. I was like, I'm never voting. Here comes Trump. I'm all super Trump.
And yeah,
I actually feel upset. My heart is breaking. And I was like, well, I got all my family to vote. I really got into this whole MAGA thing. And I'm like, man, if he can't save us, then we might as well go full-blown revolution at this point. I mean, what else can we do? A billionaire who can't be bought is basically either in on it or not in on it, whatever. Or he's threatened, like we said. I mean, I'll say maybe most likely he was good-hearted, and he got in there and realized he can't change anything other than...
I think that's really what it comes down to. I mean, this was a hostile takeover. What that means, literally, is you're taking it over despite, you know, the fact that the entire establishment from left to right is panicked about your being there. And so here we are, you know, 18 months into or 16 months into his presidency, and, you know, he can't do anything. The only thing he's gotten through is tax cuts. I mean, tax cuts for billionaires and these corporations. Which is, you know, Paul Ryan, really. It's not immigration. It's not ending interventionism. He hasn't been able to do any of the basic stuff that we liked about his program. So he's dead in the water. I mean, it's amazing.
He certainly did the North Korea thing is a good news for what I understand. That's good. He talked him to denuclearize or something, or at least consider it. That's good. 50 years, no one's ever done it. But again, they can just say that and then go blow them up later. I mean, this is the thing. Trump is not going to be there forever.
Right.
So even if he made small changes, cut taxes, even if he built a wall, you know, or started building it. Look, I don't think anything's going to happen if there's a war. There's going to be no wall. Your taxes won't matter because there'll be another trillions of dollars worth of a war with Iran and who knows how many dead people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I think, you know, it could be possible the deep state knows they can't beat Trump anywhere else but to get him sucked into a war that people will hate. Because I certainly would never vote for him again if he got us into war.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now. So, I already don't want to vote ever again.
Yeah, of course.
If he could redeem himself right now, maybe. But if he gets us into war, forget it. No one's going to vote for him again.
So what do you guys think will happen now? As I said, it's been a cool-off period, so we can kind of look at this a little bit more calm, level-headed, I would assume, kind of today, because people were convinced, like, it's happening at this point, right? So what's your prediction, guys, here? I mean, there are Russians that have, of course, they have positioned their people and their gear and their military in the right positions to be able to, they have jammers in place and stuff like that to jam drones that America is going to send in over Syria. It could develop into something really serious, but how do you guys view this? Is it if they start firing missiles at selected places and there's Russians positioned at these bases or wherever it might be, what are we looking at that point?
I'm thinking that this may be, this may be why Trump is hesitating here and may not do it, because the Russians have said they'll shoot those missiles down. I mean, my God, that's World War III, for God's sakes. I mean, if we start fighting the Russians, you know, it's just really extremely dangerous. And I think maybe, you know, you can hold back on that. I certainly hope so. I was really worried that France today says they have proof that Assad did it.
Oh, really?
I would like to see that proof. Certainly it hasn't been corroborated by the UN or anything. So I don't know where we are right now. I would not want to hazard predictions.
There's people like this guy, Michael Rubin, calling to assassinate Assad.
Yeah.
I mean, there's, you know, certain people out there want him gone. You know, Israel specifically wants them gone. Iran, they've been, I mean, Bibi with the bomb. For how many years now have we seen Bibi, they're going to build a bomb? You know, he's been doing this for years. I mean, I don't think the deep state is going to give up anytime soon. And Trump's going to probably, hopefully, if he's one of us, you know, on our side type of normal human beings, not a psychopath, he will try to resist. But, you know, if they're threatening his children, if they're burning the tower down, saying they, I don't know, these are my theories, but I think a war on this scale would be big, because you're not dealing with Iraq. You know, I was in Iraq. Their air force was pretty much useless. They had no shot. It was very quickly done. The problem with Iraq was insurgents. You know, you could take out Saddam's Red Guard or whatever they were called, but dealing with insurgents, people in houses, no uniforms, guerrilla tactics, IEDs, that's hard. But if you're dealing with a military like Russia, China, Iran, these are militaries that have technology, they're advanced, you know, they're not Iraq. And we would lose a lot of people, lots of people. If, you know, again, Russia, they could just sink one of our battleships and lose people. And then the American people get, oh, let's go in there. And then where are we even going to fight? Syria? You know, I guess we'd have to all fight in Syria. And you know, it would be a disaster. It really would be. For what? For over alleged, not even provable, not irrefutable, but alleged gassings. It's not worth it whatsoever. I mean, there's South African genocide, proven murders, no support there to the poor community, no outcry from our government, nothing. You know, there's just so many hypocrisies running around, and obviously special interest here. It's mostly Israeli special interest. It's Saudi Arabians, by the way.
If you think $6 trillion sunk into the Middle East, we've got nothing out of it, absolutely nothing, except thousands of soldiers. Yeah. Wounded, killed, trillions of dollars down the drain, thousands, many, many thousands of Iraqis killed. I mean, it's just an unbelievable nightmare. And yet, no end in sight, apparently. These people still want more.
It's not even for oil. You know, because they say, oh, we're into the oil. I said, I remember gas being $4 a gallon. What discounts of oil are we getting? It's definitely for their oil, for themselves, not us.
We've got plenty of oil anyway. The United States is the biggest oil producer in the world now. It's not for us. We need to have to sink trillions of dollars into the Middle East to get oil. It's idiotic.
Jeez. Actually, this was some information I learned from someone. Jared Kushner having interest with someone named Ira Greenstein with GD Energy, which is basically exploiting the oil in the Golan Heights, which the Golan Heights belonged to Syria at some point, but the Israelis are occupying it. So this is another special interest there, of course, that they want to make sure no one screws with, is the oil there with this green, this Genie Energy, I guess, oil firm or whatever it is, business. I'm not sure exactly what the entity is. But Kushner's involved, and Kushner is, you know, Trump's son-in-law.
Yeah, and he remember, Angelo, he's the guy who, together with Mohammed bin Salman, the new Saudi prince that have been imprisoning all these others, they've been meeting on the back end, doing secret deals about how to carve up the Middle East and stuff. I mean, they're literally the most volatile region in the world at this point is being, like, played with two, 35-year-olds or whatever the hell they happen to be. It's insane, you know, and they're just doing it for their own benefit, obviously.
Yeah, and then basically the Saudi Arabians are now letting women drive, and they're really friendly with Israel magically out of nowhere. It's just very interesting events going on. I mean, there's so many coups going on, I think, you know, with the against Trump, kind of, with all these investigations. There's a coup there, and then there's a coup in Saudi Arabia, basically. People getting arrested, like you mentioned. I think a helicopter crashed. I don't know if that's the case. I heard that. I don't know if that's true or not. Just it's very strange the events going on right now across the world, and you know, it's all going towards our favorite ally. That's what it really comes down to.
So let's talk a bit about Russia. They have been willing to. Here's the difference, what I see when it comes to the UN Security Council. I don't know what they're good for. Hopefully they are in a position to solve things. They were talking about, you know, investigations and getting people on the ground and stuff. Or Russia actually have. There was two resolutions that was proposed, one from Russia and one from America. And so Russia vetoed the American one and said, no, we're not going to go along with that. And then no one voted for the Russian one. So it's a deadlock in the Security Council. But what I understood from the situation is that America is convinced that Assad is guilty. So they want the Security Council to say, we need to punish Assad first, and then we can, like, do stuff and figure out what's going on. While Russia is like, we don't know who was guilty. We have to do an investigation first and then have them report back to the council and then take action, right? So I'm obviously with Russia here. They are make much more sense. They were even in the region, some of the footage we're showing here, in terms of the... They have boots on the ground. They've gone to Duma, the MOD out of Russia, the military defense, and said, we can't find any evidence for chlorine being used. They've taken soil samples, but they want a third party, an objective party, to go in and do the testing. And America just seems unwilling. Well, I mean, why? Who would be unwilling if this is what has happened, guys?
Well, if you want a war, and we know all the players here, they want a war. They've been wanting a war for a long time, so they are willing to believe anything that is in favor of that. I mean, certainly these neocons. If Hillary Clinton, I'm convinced if Hillary Clinton was president, this would have happened a long time ago. We'd be
exactly
in there,
yep,
up to our eyeballs in Syria. So this is something that, you know, Israel's wanted this war for a long time. One thing that's coming out here is that it's more obvious. I mean, the Israeli involvement in the Syrian civil war was always a little bit under wraps. You had to really be reading a lot to even see it. But now it's quite out in the open. Israel attacked an air base the other day. They're making these statements. They're openly prodding Trump to go to war with Iran to retaliate against Assad's supposed gas attack. So it's very obvious now. I think Israel always, like any good lobby, wants to operate in the dark. They don't really want to advertise it. But, you know, since Assad's been winning the war, they don't really have a lot of choice. They have to come out more than they ever have. And that may wake up a few people that haven't realized what's going on before.
Yeah, that's true. Assad, again, we can talk about him a little bit more, of what his incentive would be for even doing any of this, guys. It's just, it's very bizarre of why he would, at a time when they're ready to pull out, he has made statements last year talking about how the region, Khan Sehun, I think it was called, and he was talking about the fact that Al-Nusra Front was controlling the area. No one had gone in, same thing there, no one had done any testing. No third party had come in to actually try to confirm of what happened. But this doesn't seem to matter to the globalists, right? They are so convinced they want a war. Nikki Haley is saying that our time to look at dead children is over. We need to act now. And it's like, this is the only thing at this point that they have to their advantage, because no one has presented any evidence. And to go to major war with potentially even Russia over no evidence, I'm not sure if the UK and France want to go along with this. Do you guys think that would happen?
They've been waiting for a pretext. They don't need anything at all to want a war. They would do it just unilaterally for not, if Assad had done this or not. So given this, they just jump all over it and make all these assumptions. And they don't need any real event to do this, because they've been wanting to do this for years and to embroil the United States more in the Middle East.
No, I mean, obviously the Iraq war was just there's weapons. We know they're in Tikrit somewhere. I remember Colin Powell was saying, here's a thing of anthrax, and people just buy into this. But now I'm happy that people aren't buying into it that much, hopefully. And but also Israel has come out on record, basically, one of their defense ministers, Alan, basically says he prefers the Islamic State in Iran to Iran and Syria. So they'd rather have the rebels. And Israel's also been helping these people.
Yeah.
I mean, if you connect all the dots, obviously someone's playing behind the scenes, you know, and that's obviously who these people are. These Israeli Zionists, these are the aggressive types. And I don't blame all of Israel. I blame these, like, it's like almost like there's a rogue government within Israel that's putting even Jews in danger. Because if I was a Jew in Israel, I wouldn't want World War III going on right next to me. You know, it's crazy. You know, that's why I'm telling Jewish people, hey, speak out about this against your own crazy government. If I can criticize my crazy government, so can you. You know, I'm trying to convince people.
Well, look at this article, guys.
This is going to be pretty.
Look at this out of the Haaretz. This was hilarious. They're writing that just because the fact that so-called white supremacists actually defend Assad and say that they don't want a war, that means that it's anti-Semitic not to want to, like, destroy Assad and take out Syria, basically. It's hilarious. They have a couple of tweets in there from, you know, from Spencer and from, you know, a bunch of people. But that's the level of where this is at, that wherever people who are, you know, on the right position themselves, they just by default is going against it. I guess that strategically we could use that to our advantage, obviously, because we can be against some of the most insane stuff and we can be for some of the most rational stuff, and we'll pull them into, you know, cuckoo land, I guess.
Right. That article should go into the Guilt by Association Hall of Fame. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
That's amazing.
I mean, words fail me, frankly.
Yeah, alt-right calls Saturday's chemical attack in Damascus suburb a false flag operation. Ooh, like that's never happened before. Claiming it's an effort by Israel and globalists, within quotation marks, to keep U.S. troops in the Middle East. Well, what is it?
What an outrageous thought.
Yeah. What is it if not an effort to try to keep the U.S. in the region, right? Because some of the neocons, let's talk about McCain, for example. He was so stupid that he thinks that Assad is just, he is emboldened, that's the word he used, by Russia and Iran just because of this issue that the U.S. is pulling out. So he just can't wait to gas his own people. I mean, this is what they really believe, these guys.
That goes in the spin hall of fame. My God, how could you ever, you know, that is so perverse. It's just nuts. But McCain, thank God he never became president.
Oh. Yeah, I know.
They say he's a madman. Oh, you can't think of it logically because he's a madman.
Yeah, he
you
is.
Know? No, he it's is. Not that at all. It's obviously we're stupid enough to believe it if you fall for it.
Yeah.
You know, it's obvious to anyone with a brain. I've talked to many people. They're not buying it. But people but here's the problem with the whole news media. They keep saying he did it.
You're right.
Well, with Assad's passing last year, they say it in the affirmative. And you know, they'll use words like allegedly or whatever the case. But some people, like this guy Rubin, calling for his assassination, is still saying it was sarin nerve gas from the last attack.
Oh, really?
It's never proven.
Wow.
But plus, yes, all these photos of children, right? It's always children who are suffering. And we, just like the child on the beach in Turkey, you know, that which is the reason why Europe should open the stores to everybody who wants to go there. Whenever there's a gas attack like this, they always focus on the children.
Of course, yeah. And we don't. I mean, guys, we don't know what we're looking at here. We have to just be honest.
We don't
about
know
that.
What we're looking.
It could be anything. It could be anything. Yeah. It could be from a previous attack. Actually, there's no dating on the images or the photos. They could also just literally have watered, you know, sprayed water on some of these kids and holding oxygen masks on their faces. That could be all that we're looking at here.
There are some videos that really strongly imply just that it was a complete setup.
Yeah,
you know, that it was completely staged. I mean, who'd be surprised? I mean, there's huge motives here.
Yeah, definitely, exactly. And if this is all we're going on.
Right, the video circulating, they're like, all right, let's cut, let's go, ready, action. And the White Helmet's doing the mannequin challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, who has time to do a mannequin challenge?
Here's the mannequin challenge. We'll show that here. Yeah, I mean, this is amazing. This is absolutely amazing. And this is not the first thing that they've been caught doing. There's several things that the White Helmets have been caught red-handed doing. They've been retweeting photos and stuff that are much older, and they're claiming that it's from new attacks. And, you know, even with the Syria, the little dust boy, as they call him, the father spoke out later and basically said, you know, they were using him for propaganda. It was his blood that had been running, dripping down his forehead, and they took him to hospital and filmed him. And the dad was like, nothing had happened to the guy. So, you know, now we can see, if you guys watching the video version of this, there, they're now they're pretending to rescue him when they were just standing still for the photo op earlier. So, you know, one of the speculations here, guys, is the white helmets, of course, have been a front propaganda effort to demonize Assad. So basically, they might be the very people that are performing some of the attacks, possibly, or they're working with a group that, you know, they know where the attacks are supposed to happen because they're always first on location. They're ready with a film camera pretending to help people. And there's other footage, too, by the way, where they're being caught celebrating with some al-Nusra front people. You know, see white helmets among them and stuff like that. It's bizarre. So it's we can't take this at face value. We have to call for investigations, guys.
Of course, even if all those pictures are absolutely true, we still don't know who did it. So it's
exactly. Yeah. We have to be able to ask questions. Something that's this important. Something that's this life changing for so many people must have extraordinary proof behind it to back it up. But
for something like that, you need huge proof. You need overwhelming proof because we're talking thousands of lives, billions and trillions of dollars. This is just yet to go in there. Just the assumption, and you know,
they're investigating an insurance claim more than they have done with this thing. You know,
exactly.
A few bucks. You know. It's not.
It's really insane that it's almost like they have no other things. It's like the death throes of the fake news is happening. You know, it's like they're so desperate. They're just trying to push this, regardless of these videos we just saw, regardless of the illogical process which Assad would have to take to do these attacks. It's like they don't even. They're just pushing at this point. And you know, sadly, because our government is a republic, once we elect these people, they can do whatever they want. And then what happens is, they lose power, and then another puppet will go in, changes in this kind of thing. And that's what's sad, you know, and then we'll blame the left, or we'll blame the right, or we'll blame Trump or Obama, all puppets, and I mean, hopefully Trump isn't one. But you know, this is the sad reality that we're living in here. The media, and the banks, and the military-industrial complex, all they have is that they're pawns in power, and that's really it for us.
I noticed that the American Jewish Committee had released a statement in which they were absolutely certain that Assad did this. But yeah, when it comes to what's going on in Gaza, they would have really high barriers for wall for how much evidence they would need to show that Israel acted with excessive force or anything related to race differences or anything like that. They need huge more evidence than we already have. You know, it's just a standard ploy, you know, that if they want to believe something, they don't need any evidence at all, really. But if they don't want to believe something, the barriers are incredibly high, and they act like they're real scientists or something.
Yeah,
and sadly, while this entire fog of war that may happen is going on, I think we already spoke about it. Gaza was bombed.
No, we didn't. Tell us about that.
But we didn't do that. That's what we were talking about. Yeah, we were talking about it off camera. Well, yeah. So I've been banned from Twitter for 6 days, 7 days. And so someone was posting something about Gaza, and I can't retweet it, so I had to make a quick Periscope. And I was like, I wanted to confirm it, because people from Gaza were sending photos to this hashtag Gaza. And I was like, well, let me see if this is real, you know. And then Haaretz confirmed that they're attacking Hamas targets, okay? Now, this is obviously, I believe they just say that, and they're just bombing, they're ethnically cleansing the Palestinians. That's what they're doing. And I even predicted this, because I'm like, look, during this whole mess, they're going to, they launched to Syria, see if we take the bait. Didn't work out. Well, let's go kill the Palestinians real quickly and say it's Hamas. And just before that, they were shooting protesters. They were shooting protesters with bullets that explode inside of them. And that's why, you know, it's funny because they don't like the UN, because the UN brings the fact that Israel commits many war crimes. And so does our government, by the way. So that's probably why nobody likes the UN. But the UN, when I look at their videos and they talk about what's going on, they talk about war crimes and things like this. But the Palestinians are basically open-air concentration camps. Every so often they come in there, bomb them, shoot them, sniper children. And now they even have skunk spray. Have you seen this? They run around with these trucks full of, like, you know, sewage water or skunk spray. And they spray they say it's for dispersing crowds. But then they'll drive around spraying homes while people are there just to punish them collectively. It's absolutely crazy. And, like I said, during this whole fog of war, I figured the Israelis would take this, you know, opportunity to go attack Hamas and, you know, expand probably even more. You know, it's that's what's going on there too.
Yeah.
It's so incredible.
Sometimes the Palestinians have been advised to use nonviolent means of protest. But what happens when they do nonviolent protests is they pour that slime on them, that horrible smelling stuff, you know, and also in the Gaza protests, they're documented examples where Israelis have shot these people in the back. It's not like even trying to get into the country. They're just protesting.
Well, they say they were throwing rocks, no question. They were burning tires, but that's it. First of all, you can't throw a rock and hit anybody. They're not throwing a rock into Israel. They're just throwing rocks. And these Israeli snipers are there shooting kids.
Yeah.
They're shooting people. They're unarmed. They might have a little axe or something and they're mad.
Yeah.
But is that worth shooting these people down? You know, are you that threatened that a person, a kid's throwing a rock that'll never hit you? Yeah. These are war crimes. This is genocide straight up on camera. And not one American politician has condemned that. And not one American politician has condemned the strike that, no, they didn't ask permission. They didn't say, hey, guys, we're going to strike, you know, this airbase. No, they just do what they want. And our politicians are quiet. They don't dare speak about it because they're all in their pockets, obviously, with AIPAC, which is another story. A very powerful lobby, probably the most powerful lobby, period. It's not even registered. And I learned today, actually, a Jewish man wrote an opinion on Forward.com. It's obviously in the opinion section. It wouldn't be on the front page. Saying it's time for AIPAC to register. And
as a foreign agent.
It's not registered. And I'm like, how did they get away with it? And he explains.
After 60 years.
What's that?
After 60 years of being very influential in American politics.
I'm just working for Congress before AIPAC. I think Kennedy was trying to get it registered. And then, you know, things happened to him. But, the loophole is, and explains in the article, the loophole is that it's not registered as a foreign lobby, but rather it's for Americans who want to support Israel.
Yeah.
That's the loophole.
Right.
And they've been doing that, and therefore they can literally pay off politicians, literally.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But here's a Jewish guy saying it's time to register it because now it's basically Bibi's lobby. That's what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
As far-right extremists, it doesn't represent what it was for, according to the founder of the AIPAC. So there you go. Even within the Jewish community, there's a split in half, according to this article.
Interesting, yeah.
It's interesting to see that. But that's why none of our politicians do it. And I was watching videos about Cynthia McKinney, who said every one of us have to sign a pledge if we want money. And also James Traficant, who literally on Fox said openly, look, I think Israel is a stranglehold in our government and blah, 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 blah. And he died in a farm accident. which happens a lot, apparently. So, I mean, you know, we're dealing with a mafia here, honestly. That's what we're dealing with. And none of it's outlandish to think this. You know, it's not a conspiracy theory. If you go against very powerful people, that you might get killed in a tractor accident, or you might lose power, or you might not get money, or, you know, we're dealing with very serious situations.
Yeah, definitely.
It's also interesting that, you know, what's going on with Saudi Arabia, our great ally? You know, they're starving the people in
Yemen.
Oh yeah,
in Yemen,
yeah.
And nobody cares about that.
Nope.
You know, suddenly we have this gas, so-called gas attack by Assad, and everybody's up, just weeping for the children and everything else. I mean, it's just unbelievably hypocritical. These people don't have any principles at all.
No, and you know what's crazy? I remember Trump specifically. I remember during the campaign. He was telling Hillary, give the money back to Saudi Arabia. Because remember, WikiLeaks came out and said, you know, Saudi Arabia was funding ISIS. Qatar was clandestinely funding ISIS with Qatar. And then Trump does a $400 billion. How much money did he make an arms deal with these people?
Yeah, like billions.
Arms deal. But he gave the Saudis these weapons.
It's just peanuts to them, as he said, which is true. Obviously, they have so much money, so much resources. So Syria has been, guys, kind of like the focal point. It's been the convergence point of just so many different agendas. You know, you do have the oil, you know, issue. Syria is perfectly positioned to have pipelines through it running to Europe. And that could play some small role in it, but I'm not one of these people to think it's all about oil. But there are many other, you know, Saudi Arabia, of course, want to see the influence from Iran and their their allies lessened, in the region. Basically, you have the Shia-Sunni split as usual. But then you have the Yinon plan, of course, the promised larger piece of land for Israel. Basically, that's a religious kind of ideology, obviously. But how much does that play into this, guys? Do you think of a greater Israel that either Israel can directly control the territory and take it over, or at the very least they can have a puppet in there that's running the country, which is much more pro-Israeli than Assad and some of these other people there now?
Oh, absolutely. I think that Israel very clearly is siding with the Sunnis against the Shiites because Iran is Shiite. And they don't want this corridor all the way from Iran to the Mediterranean. But, you know, you would have think they would have thought about that when they advocated, invading Iraq. Because Iraq was Sunni. The government was Sunni, even though the majority of the population was Shiite. And so now they're in a situation where Iran dominates Iraq and also, very heavily involved in Syria. So this is a situation that they produced all by themselves. And yet they want to topple every government in the region. It's amazing.
And they can't do it alone, and they definitely need us. And from what I understand, the Israeli flag itself represents the Nile and Euphrates River. So you have those blue lines.
That's right.
Someone said, no, that's a religious symbol. It's a religious, but the promised land is literally from the Nile to the Euphrates.
That's right.
And that's, if you see the promised land, that's
what the book of Genesis says, right there.
Yep, that's right.
They talk to someone like Michelle Bachmann and some of these American politicians. They really believe it. You know, every last word of Genesis. And so we got to help Israel conquer all this area.
It's very interesting because you have a lot of Christians, and in the article with the about registering AIPAC, there's the Christians United for Israel.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the religious group where, okay, the story goes, these people killed your savior, and you're supposed to go with them to the to the end. And then also, Israel was founded by an atheist. Theodor Herzl was an atheist, so how can he claim the promised land if he's an atheist? He doesn't even believe that the Jews should have this promised land, in a sense. And there are rabbis in Brooklyn. I think they're called Kudra Nidre or something like that. These are the rabbis that go to Iran and go to these meetings and stuff. They are against Israel existing completely because, according to Judaism, they were exiled from the land. Until the Messiah returns, which clearly wasn't Christ because he was killed, they don't get any land. But the Zionist idea was, you know what, we're getting, pogroms all over the world, everyone hates us, let's get our own country, I'm going to do this anyway.
Yeah.
So I find it interesting, the Zionists, who are 50% basically atheists, or even more than that, they're claiming the Holy Land, which they can't possibly believe in if they're atheists. It doesn't make any sense to me. It's clearly something else going on.
Well, and the religious agenda kind of fits nicely, into that. America never, historically, America was never that pro-Israel. It was when, you have the Scofield Bible that really started pushing this kind of evangelical type of Christianity, and all the televangelists, is that what they're called? Yeah, they were like blasting this message right after Scofield took it over, and that's been so successful, super successful. And the idea of Judeo-Christian culture and all that kind of, these are recent phenomena, which is not, doesn't go back historically. So they've been piggybacking on the enthusiasm that most of the religious Christian people feel in America. And they've been, of course, tremendously successful at that. So, as you said, I mean, even the Herzl was not religious. He used this to his advantage, obviously. Yeah.
There's a big Jewish backstory to the whole Scofield Bible thing, where this Jew, Felix Untermeyer, in the early 20th century, very much a Jewish activist, very much a Zionist, he's the guy that promoted this Scofield Bible, got it published by Oxford University Press, gave it all this publicity and everything. They and if you look at that Bible, they're full of very strongly Zionist footnotes. This was just virtually written by a Zionist. I mean, obviously there is an element of Zionism in Jewish religious thought, but it was really maximized and propagandized. And sadly, these Christian Zionists have taken that hook, line, and sinker.
Yeah, they're being used as pawns, they should know about this. They should be aware that it's not by people who are on their page religiously, so to speak.
No, not. I mean, if they just looked at the Talmud, if they just knew what the Talmud says about Christ, they would be very upset. They don't know.
That's true. Boiling in excrement, and you know, there's some pretty nasty lines in there.
Excrement.
Yep. Yep.
There's not much pro-Christian love there.
What do you guys think is going to happen here in the next couple of days? Has Trump cooled off? There was two tweets in a row. One was like, you know, get ready, Russia, you know, new, fast, smart, within quotation mark, missiles, supposedly. Then later, it was a tweet that said, well, you know, relations with Russia is really bad. It's like, yeah, you think? And so someone probably told him, like, hey, buddy, like, ease off a little bit. What's going to happen, guys? Let's talk about the predictions here in the next couple of weeks, really, or it could be a few days. But is America going to strike? And if so, what targets are they going to strike? And is there a risk that there will be Russian casualties in this? And if so, what's going to happen? Guys, give us your take.
Well, I'm a little bit of a see on this. I feel so strongly that it's a horrible move. I feel so strongly that it's built on a lie, that it's being done by people who have ulterior motives, that have wanted this all along and were just waiting for a pretext. I am extremely worried that he's bringing in Bolton, Pompeo. He's got Nikki Haley. These are warmongers. He's getting rid of the people in the National Security Council and so on. Like Mike Anton was a very sensible guy that just left the government as soon as Bolton came on. And so I'm very worried about the direction of the Trump administration. And so I can't say I'd be in the least surprised by something like that happening, that he wouldn't arm Syria.
Yeah, there's a couple of articles here on the Express that they're talking about the different weapons that could be used, whether, you know, Russia might strike the UK. There's also an article talking about the outdated, supposedly, defense system that Russia has and that U.S. could destroy this. I really don't know, guys. We'll just have to see. But this is interesting that they're talking about war and that it could be ramping up towards war. What do you think, Angelo? Is there any risk that there's a major conflict with Russia coming in all of this?
Yeah, look, if we strike Syria and Russia and Putin, see, Putin's very cold and calculated. I actually respect Putin very much. You know, sure, with the other attacks, he stayed calm. You know, he's playing chess, honestly. You know, Trump, what's confusing about Trump is he says, I won't ever telegraph or what's the word, show my move. And then, so it's almost like he's now doing it to tell us maybe the opposite. I don't know. If Trump is compromised, nothing I say matters. They're going to get their war. You know, I tell people I'm going to criticize Trump because I say if he's playing 4D chess, then my criticism will mean nothing. It will actually make him seem like he's making the wrong move. When he's not, he'll do the right thing. But if he's not playing 4D chess, and none of us criticize him, he will do the wrong thing. I think Trump listens to his base. But if he's compromised with threats of his life or he's in on it, then nothing changes, and we will see a war. I don't know if it will be like World War II with hundreds of thousands of troops. I think we've passed that. I think now it's more like surgical strikes or things like that. I mean, we lost 4,000, 5,000 people in Iraq. It seems to me the more technically advanced we get, the less casualties we face. But, you know, you're dealing with nuclear powers now. And if Putin gets mad, he might use some nukes. You know, I hope not, but we don't know. It can get really, really ugly. But we certainly would probably see ships getting sunk and people dying there, which would enrage Americans. At that point, nobody would care why it started.
Exactly. And that's the thing, Angelo. It could accelerate. It could just be, you know, a couple of things happen. But at that point, it's too late and both sides are going to retaliate. You don't know. And so
I don't like even 4D chess because suppose he's playing 4D chess and an accident happens.
Right, of course.
Like, whoops, someone got killed. Yep. That could start the war. You know, that's why like people say, oh, trust the plan, Angelo, QAnon. Oh, these forums are telling me the truth. No, you don't put lives at risk. And then, because what if someone does do another false flag and it does convince the Russians that it was us and it wasn't, and there you go.
Right, but that's a good point, too, because, Israel didn't say anything when they did their strike against the T-4 base.
Yeah,
I mean, that's like pouring gasoline on a bad fire already, and they didn't say anything, right? They were summoned to Russia because there could have been Russian personnel at the base at that time, and they didn't say anything, they didn't do anything, they just go bomb, and then they shut the hell up for 2 days. I think still they haven't actually officially said it was them America said it was them, and Russia has said it was them, but they haven't done so. So they're completely reckless.
That's very dangerous, because I feel like it's almost like 1967 USS Liberty all over again.
Yeah.
It's really what it can provoke a war. They want Iran to do something. They would love if Iran would do something, make an aggressive move against Israel or something like that. Everybody, but the people that want this, they're just looking for any pretext at all.
Yes.
That's right.
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's why you're right, Henrik. They didn't say anything because I think the Russian jets scrambled and then turned around. Maybe they saw it wasn't us, you know? So that could have been right there. That could have been the Russians could have struck something.
Yeah. It's very dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
Here's an article. Let's talk about this, Kevin, before we move on from the chemical issue as well here, because the rebel group that Assad and the Sana News Agency was talking about was this. It's not a new group, but they changed name. They always change name, but they're called Jash al-Islam, the Army of Islam. And they were controlling, they've been controlling much of Duma. They've also, by the way, have held hostages. So this is very possible that if it was them, which the Syrian state TV reported, then say that it's controlled by Jash al-Islam. They're the ones who did it because they were being beaten back by Assad with the help of Russia. So they're the ones that have the most incentive of staging something like this, or even using real chemicals against the hostages that they held, film that, then release that to the world and say, oh my God, Assad did this. It would benefit them more in the situation because they would get the support that they're looking for from America. But this article was used, or was talking about this very issue as well, that they had been previously caught using these chemicals against the Kurdish army in the north of Syria. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. And I have no doubt that this Islamic group cares nothing for the people that they're involved with. They're like ISIS, you know. They're basically evil people that would do anything. So they would have no compunctions about actually hurting civilians there, and claiming that it was Assad. And the fact that they have used them in the past for pretty reliable reports, I gather, suggests that they have these weapons. It was just a matter then of having the political will to do it. Well, they certainly had the political will when Trump announced he was wanting to get out.
I mean, it's obvious and it's been confirmed they've used it. Why are we bombing them? That's my question.
Exactly.
They've been using it. Other groups, 52 other times, according to the UN. Why are they not getting bombed? Why do we keep funding these people? Oh, we just changed their name. Oh, okay, I see. Give them a new name, give them, drop off some stuff on accident. That's what's been going on this whole time. It's clear that these are mercenaries being, that's what essentially the UN said. There is no civil war in Syria. There's mercenaries being funded by Israel, the United States, Turkey, Qatar, all these people trying to take out Assad for whatever damn reason. Clearly, many reasons that none of us all know of. But oil, territory, expansion of Israel, no question about it. And it's obviously what's the case. And you know what? Because of the internet and because of the Iraq war being such a disaster, I think people are seeing. I mean, now you got people literally videotaping things and boom, now it's all over the world. It's hard to like that, And that's why they want internet censorship, because then you can control this information that's coming out of nowhere.
Right.
I think the internet shows like this. Alternative media is very detrimental to the plan. I mean, this isn't the 1930s where you have a newspaper and it says, go into Germany and then you just go. This is now it's news everywhere, and I think that's why fake news is being pumped even more, because they can't control the flow of information. Let's just pump it up with so much fake news, nobody knows the difference. That's, I think, another
strategy. Which is why we're seeing so many attempts at talk about censorship. Like you got pumped off Twitter. Yeah. PayPal ending accounts, Facebook talking about censorship, Zuckerberg talking about hiring 20,000 people to monitor content, and part of that is hate speech. A big part of that is hate speech.
Oh yeah.
So it's really they have sort of lost control of that of the flow of information, and that is a huge deal for them. The thing is that it's beyond foreign policy, of course, domestically. And it's not just people like us getting through. People on the far left are also getting through. And I think that's polarizing people more. I mean, you see, mm-hmm. you know, anti-white hatred just routinely on the internet now, and Twitter, and even, you know, places like Huffington Post and all those places. I think things are just getting more extreme and more polarized. And I think what they want to do is shut it down, make a narrow window of conversation, you know, with that things that are permissible. That's the way they like it. They've certainly had that for a long time.
Yeah, definitely. You have the censorship on one end, of course, and they're trying to shut down that they're losing the information warfare yeah. here because there's too many of us, basically. They can't control us all.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're terrified of us because what we are saying resonates with people. They're starting to see it around. They're concerned about what's happening in Hungary and Poland, these other European countries, Austria, and they can see what can happen here, and even in Western Europe. So I really feel strongly that they are trying to find ways to clamp down on the information. Full of information, because basically what we're saying is just common sense. It's the people's self-interest, we're right. We're the honest ones, and I think that's what terrifies them. We're the ones that are, you know, doing our research and trying to get things right. These people are propagating fake news. They're jumping at any pretext to go to war for Israel. They're the ones that are completely, you know, have no credibility, really.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's true. Yep, that's true. We come with the truth here, and we're going where the information is leading us.
Yeah, we try our best. I mean, I tell you every day. I never feel like I'm bullshitting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
I feel like I've investigated this stuff. I try to get. I mean, where's the evidence that Assad did this? I'm looking at.
Right.
You know, we're trying to find it. These people, they don't need evidence.
No, no. And they don't need evidence because they know that it's probably staged. And that's why they know that.
They know it's bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, if the one last year was bullshit, why should we think this one?
Of course, exactly. And I'm surprised also that because they're using the same thing over. That's why I was thinking maybe they just jumped on this because it was an opportunity, but they weren't the instigators of it. If Jaish al-Islam did this, it could have been outside of the territory of the permission by the deep state and the globalists that are ultimately funding them. And they said, let's do it and see what happens. And they jumped on it. I don't know, because obviously, why would they rehash the same old lie, literally almost to the day a year later? That's what's happened, you know?
I almost wonder if they're surprised that these people are so gullible that they fall for it again.
That's pretty amazing. We have one other aspect too, guys. I'm showing some of the logos from the Free Syrian Army, which is another one of these kind of moderate. They're in between, kind of. They're still anti-Assad, obviously, so they line up with ISIS on that on that level. But the interesting thing about them and some of the other groups as well, like the Syrian, what are they called? The Syrian Free Army, I think, or the Syrian Democratic Union, or something like that. They have been funded by America, of course. But what's interesting with this is that they have basically set up as a more sanitized version of the YPG, which is the People's Liberation Front or something. It's a Kurdish movement, basically. And so America have ended up funding the Kurds in their fights in the northern region. And this, of course, is interesting because Turkey have been fighting the Kurds. Turkey is a NATO member. And there have been tensions even on the northern front in Syria that America has inadvertently, you know, given them resources and money and helping them out while they're fighting Turkey. So that's another level that we saw, I think it's a couple of months back, was really close to blowing up as well. We haven't seen more of that, but it's not only, you know, over like, the Assad's territory and stuff like that. It's in northern Syria as well. So it's very dangerous on so many fronts, guys.
Very dangerous and very complicated, as you say, with Turkey. They've also had a problem with the Kurds, and they're not going to stop that. Whereas, you know, Israel, they want the Kurds to fight Assad, you know, so.
Yeah, they're supporting them. And this is interesting. Let's comment on this. We're talking about the Kurds, and the establishment has been incredibly supportive of the Kurds, which is interesting. And I'm not necessarily against them as a group and as a, you know, distinct group or anything like that. But it's funny that they have advocated, here's an article out of the Washington Post talking about the Kurds as the biggest ethnic group that doesn't have a country of their own. They deserve a nation. Basically, they're advocating for ethno-states when it comes to these groups in the Middle East, you know. And I've seen the comments on Fox News and stuff like that, too. We got to do more to support the Kurds, and they need to basically slice off a piece of the Middle East to have it as their own land for their own ethnic group, and they deserve it, right? So it's just immense double standards from the mainstream media on the Kurdish issue.
This has been Israeli foreign policy for a long time, to break up the Middle East into small states, you know, that you would have a Kurdish state and you would have a Sunni and a Shiite in Iraq and so on. You'd break them up into three different parts. And they probably advocate for that in Syria, too, some kind of partition. So you have a bunch of powerless, very divided entities there that Israel can deal with easily. I mean, they really didn't like Saddam Hussein's situation, where he was presiding over a government that had all these different groups in it, and had some good power and population to create a threat. When you divide it all up, it won't be a threat. So Israel's foreign policy has pursued that for a long time. This is the fruition of that.
Yeah, definitely.
Divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer.
Yeah, exactly. They don't want to. The more of a bigger union you have, and of course, we also know that in the Middle East, they do benefit a lot from having a strong armed leader that can keep these different groups together and still, run the nation forward, kind of like Assad has done to a certain extent. And so they went overboard and say, he's so fierce and such a tyrant that now he's just gassing people that he doesn't like of his own population, which is utterly ridiculous. But supposedly, guys, let's talk about ISIS here a little bit before we round things up here for this time. They have supposedly fled, from the region. It was very interesting that the American coalition actually let ISIS escape out of Raqqa. They took 4,000 people with them. There's these convoys that have been filmed. There was one truck that was loaded so heavily with weapons that the axle broke in it and stuff like that. And they let them escape. They literally let them just drive off out of Raqqa into the desert. They were being monitored. This is the BBC piece that exposed all this, the big secret about ISIS, right? And they let them escape to Turkey, and then Turkey said, oh, whoops, we let them go into Europe. We don't have anything. So I don't think ISIS is dead. I think it will rear its head, who knows, possibly in a Western European country and have that as a headquarters here. But, if ISIS defeated and some of these other rebel groups in Syria can be defeated, we should be able to restore order back to Syria and get repatriation for some of these, all these refugees that has fled into Europe the last 2 years, guys. Is that going to happen?
It's obscene. It's obscene what's happening. Assad has the support of the vast majority of his people. He was running a government that did not oppress these minorities. There were different religions. He himself is an ethnic minority. But he was running it, it was just like Saddam Hussein. It was working over there. And all of a sudden, all this propaganda about him and about the government and funding rebel groups. It's always easy to find rebel groups in those Arab countries, because those countries are always split along ethnic lines, religious lines. They're infinitely, divided. So it's easy for someone to go in there and offer money to these people, arm them, train them, and there'll be a civil war. And that's what's happened in Syria. There was no reason for that. It was just, it was part of Israeli foreign policy. They've been in war with Syria since 1973. And it still hasn't been, ended. There's no formal ceasefire. And as we were saying before, they occupy the Golan Heights. I think they've annexed it. Syria is never going to get that back without another war. The Arab countries are very vulnerable to that, and they've taken full advantage.
Well, I feel many of the refugees who are legit want to go home. So those who are legit want to go back home. But the other ones who are not, from Pakistan and all these people, all these male refugees who are young children who are like 30, who like our women very much and want free stuff, they don't want to go back. But they're coming in, this whole Soros plan over there. And then ISIS escaping, they're such an invested asset for our governments. They don't want to destroy them, clearly. So they'll probably use them somewhere else. Or they'll just change their name. Because who are these people? I don't know what these people are. They just change names every day. It could still be ISIS right there, Al-Jarish or whatever they're called.
Yeah, you're right.
we don't know what's going on at all. I mean, we are told what's going on. And it's so crazy that, I don't see it ever ending until the puppet masters behind all this are confronted and removed from power. And that's going to take a lot of patriotism. A lot of, like Dr. McDonald said, Viktor Orban and Hungary and Poland and these countries are sick and tired of this multiculturalism, the EU, this communism being shoved down their throats. We're going to have to see something here in America with these lobbies trying to get us into war. Because without American funding and power behind these countries who want their little special interests, they won't do anything. The only reason why we have these wars, and obviously the wars today, as I said, I don't think we'll see a World War II mass invasion. What we'll see are these surgical strikes and then these pawn mercenaries that we pay. That's probably what's going to happen. That's what's been happening.
Yeah, surgical strikes, more urban warfare.
But, I don't think there'll ever be security in the region until we deal with the real threats, these globalist deep state operatives and every government and traitors, obviously. And this is a lot of purging. It's a lot of purging.
Needs to be done. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. I want to plug you guys' stuff here a little bit before we end. Of course, follow Kevin McDonald on Twitter. Look him up. Follow him. Of course, he has also the Occidental Observer. Check that out. He has the Occidental Quarterly, a number of other things. You can help, of course, Kevin by donating and stuff like that as well, but an excellent website. Tons of articles, a lot of stuff that you need to keep up to date with, so check that out. Then, of course, we also have Angelo Joan Gage. Check him out on Twitter. And I believe, Angelo, is the YouTube page the main one that people should go to, or do you have a website set up? Is it AngeloJoanGage.net?
Yeah, my website, just throw art. I don't really do much on it. My YouTube is, I'm going to get back into this, doing anti-war stuff. But really, my Twitter activism is really where I'm at. And you'll see some YouTube videos, but just the Twitter's fine. You can just throw them there.
When are you going to get back on there again? How many days have you got to go?
I think I have 6 days left. So I'll be throwing Periscopes up because somehow it gets through. But YouTube won't go through that. But yeah, I was banned because I suggested that traitors should be hung. So that's what my suggestion. I didn't target anybody. I didn't say, but hey, I thought I'd be banned for this whole.
I guess those who know that they're traitors were struck by that comment. Yeah. So ban him.
Okay.
All right, awesome guys. Thank you so much for coming on, both of you. Keep up the good work. We'll talk to you guys soon, and we'll hope for the best. Of course, we'll see what happens in the next couple of days. But everyone, stay calm. We'll keep watching what's happening, and we'll prepare for the worst, but hope for the best, as I say. Thanks, guys.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Henry. Okay, take care.